Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, June 5th, 2012, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Sierra. And tonight, we're happy to welcome Anastasia to the show as a new co-host. She's made so many valuable contributions to empowering Starseeds, and we're so glad to have her on board. We'll be welcoming her in just a moment. Our featured guest this evening is author Jeanna Dut. We had the pleasure of meeting Jeanna while we were in France recently, and we're delighted to have her on the show to talk about her book, White Lie. It's a thrilling story based on facts and research she's uncovered concerning the secret quest of the Knights Templar, the enigma of Rennes Le Chateau, and the adventures of relic hunter Otto Rahn. Jeanna lives in France, so her interview has been pre-recorded for us tonight. Her website, and you got to check it out, is jeannadu.com, and I'm going to spell that for you. It is JeannaDout, and it's pronounced Jeanna Dut. So, and it's jeannadut.com. At the top of the show, Dr. Meg Blackburn-Losey will be dropping by to talk for a few minutes about her upcoming crop circle adventure in England. Dr. Meg always brings us great information and exciting news, so we're looking forward to having her visit. We want to thank Sahar for hosting the switchboard this evening, and for those with questions or comments tonight, the call-in number is 917-889-8292. And then remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. And if you like the show, please click follow on our show page and remember to tell a friend about us. For our new listeners, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. And we'd also like to thank Rose and Sahar for their great work on behalf of our Starseed forum. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. And we'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. And we now offer a Stage 4 support service with Sierra for readings, especially with contactees and abductees. So check out Sierra's World on our main site. And now I'd like to introduce my co-host, Lavendar, Sierra, and Anastasia. Welcome, ladies.
Hi, hello. Lavendar here.
This is Anastasia. Hello, everybody.
Hey, where are you, Sierra?
And Sierra.
Hey. Well, welcome, Anastasia. And Arielle, why don't you go ahead and take the lead with Anastasia tonight?
Well, Anastasia, you just know I'm tickled to have you with us, and I love what you have to say and your outlook and your philosophy, and you're just really so evolved and bringing a lot to Starseeds everywhere, and we're glad to put you front and center right now. So I know you have a little bit of something that you wanted to talk about while we are waiting for Dr. Meg to drop by.
Sure. And
okay.
I just want everybody to know the privilege is mine. I'm just so honored and excited and so happy to be a part of it, and it's just a privilege, and it's a wonderful mission to be included in on this, and I'm just really appreciative of all of our listeners and the Starseed, and of course, all of you. We're all sisters, and it's just really exciting, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity, and I hope to be a good contributor and give all that I have to it, because it is a worthy mission, and we're all about advancing ourselves and helping the planet, so I'm really honored to be a part of it. So I guess everybody, maybe not everybody, but some of you might know that we are in the Venus transit across the sun right now. It's a rare event. It only happens every 100 and so years, 122, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's occurring right now, and we can see it live. It will be ongoing for the next 7 hours. It started at about 6.09 p.m. Eastern, 3 o'clock, some odd minutes, Pacific time. And you can find that if you want to watch that later on tonight, recorded live on space cameras, or cameras actually from different places on the planet. A lot of people are recording it. And one of the ones that I'm looking at it from is events.slooh.com. And also you can go to spaceweather.com and find other links to watching the Venus transit live. So that's really exciting. You know, we had this fantastic solar eclipse just a few days ago. And then on Monday, yesterday we had the lunar eclipse, which was a lovely thing. We didn't get to see that here. And also now we're into this wonderful Venus transit. And for those of you that have been tracking the skies and the signs of the times, as it were, we've just had so many wonderful things happening in the skies, alignments of the stars and just wonderful stuff. So it's all been going on this year. Also, we are in a geomagnetic storm right now over the planet that's coming from the sun. The sun's been very, very active. So and I don't know how it's looked where you have been, Ariel or Lavendar, but has the sunlight seemed a little bit different to you today? Has anyone noticed Sierra?
We didn't get any sunlight here. Sierra, did you get any sunlight today?
Yeah, it's an interesting yellowy, pinkish glow because I'm in Arizona, so we got sunlight.
Okay.
But it's an odd color.
It was odd today. Uh-huh.
Yes.
So
sort of, it's really neat.
It sounds beautiful.
Well, at least in Arizona, it sounds beautiful. I live in Georgia, and it's been raining most of the day, but so we haven't really seen that. But
well, it's a once-in-a-lifetime event, this Venus transit across the sun, and maybe Lavendar will tell us a little bit about that. I don't know what she's got planned, but this is pretty significant. It won't happen again in our lifetime. So if you want to see what that looks like, and it gives us an idea of how enormous our sun is, just a huge, huge sphere. And Venus is a little dark dot that's going across the face of the sun. And if you go to events@slew.com, you can also see the solar flares happening on the surface of the disk. So really fascinating stuff. And then I wanted to tell everybody about, I found this wonderful website that has the best sightings, the best UFO sightings throughout the year. They publish them every month. And the latest one was the best UFO sightings of May 2012, of course. And it goes back through the first of the year in January. And this site is a must-see. You just got to check this out. It is www.anonymousfo.com. You want me to spell that? Do you think I should spell that in case somebody does not spell anonymous?
Anonymous?
It's www.anonymousfo.com. And everybody needs to check this out. This latest video is just absolutely intriguing. It's just a must-see. That's all I can tell you. So please check that out because you're just going to get your eyes wide open. There are so many sightings occurring right now all over the planet. We're in a big rush of sightings. And this particular site picks the best UFO videos that are submitted from around the world and posts them. And they actually claim that they vet them for accuracy. So there's some really cool stuff to see on there. So www.anonymousfo.com. Everybody
check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Sierra and I had a sighting in England.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, Sierra saw it first, so maybe you should describe it, Sierra.
Which day? Because I actually saw a couple of UFOs while we were gone.
Well, just tell us one of them.
Well, I was thinking about the one at night when we came out of the Drum Inn.
Oh, yes, that was amazing. Okay, so we came out of the Drum Inn, and I looked up towards Orion's Belt, and there was a bright star out of place. and I stopped, and I actually turned, and I watched for a minute. Ariel ran by, and we were taking pictures and being silly, and I was like, wait a minute, and I watched it. It was really, really bright, and so I telepathically communicated, and I said, are you one of our galactic brothers and sisters? And I saw a flash, and I go, Ariel, come back here.
It responded to you with a flash.
Yes, and then it started to move south-southwest, and then Ariel got to my side really quickly, and another craft that was less bright was moving up towards it, and they did this loop-de-loop thing. And so then the bright one shot up really, really fast, and it was actually going out of atmosphere, so it shot up northwest, and the other one started to fall down the other way, and Ariel was watching the other one, so it changed intensity and brightness. It changed its rate of speed, and it did maneuvers. So it basically X'd out anything that would have it not be a valid UFO sighting. So it was really, really exciting. Because sometimes you get the bright, steady light, and then it goes away, and it seems like it might change, you know, intensity or slow down, speed up. But this was just really, really amazing and unique as a sighting, and I've seen a lot of them.
Well, Sierra, you really would probably appreciate this video I'm talking about, because there are actual videos of things that you're describing. And at a time like that, don't you wish you had your video camera positioned?
Oh, yeah, I just sit there with my mouth agape.
It's hard to get focused, And a lot of these videos that I'm watching on this site, I'm looking at one right now, the people are so excited they can hardly hold the camera still, but nevertheless, some of them managed to be, I mean, these are good quality videos, and there are some here turning rainbow colors of red and the most beautiful emerald green and pink, and they're close. And then there's another one of a diamond craft with beautiful colored lights, and it's very distinct. And then there's this incredible donut. There's a number of videos now showing these donut craft in the outer space outside of the atmosphere. Very large, immense craft. One of them approaching the sun. It's actually a solar, taken with a solar camera. Somebody was observing the sun. And the craft itself appears as a dark spot on the lower left of the footage. And as it sort of slowly emerges into view, and a flare that's coming off the surface of the sun is attracted by this disk. The flare goes directly to the disk. By that time, you can see that it's a donut. It appears to have a hole in the middle. And this craft absorbs the flare from the sun. In fact, the flare actually wraps itself around this large, dark object and sort of hugs it and is consumed by it. And there have been
amazing.
A number of these donut craft sighted around our space station and higher atmosphere satellites and things like that that we've got up in the air. These things are immense.
It's really amazing that we're starting to capture it with such clarity, because these are the things, I believe, which are going to bring disclosure about. Not some big, all of a sudden, announcements from the government. It's discovery after discovery after discovery, undisputable proof after proof after proof, just flooding all of the mainstream media. And then finally, people are just, this is ridiculous. And then it's time, and then it comes. So it's
really
exciting to see that we're at that point.
Well, with the advent of cell phone cameras, which are just an incredible addition to our pursuit of truth on this planet, as well as high-quality video cameras, people are really all over the world capturing this. And one of the things that's just absolutely electrifying is a video they took over China where those trumpets, that I mentioned that on a previous program with Lavendar, that the trumpet sounds coming from the sky and the grinding, winding, whiny sounds are in this particular video. So the question on the clip was, is this coming from the UFO? So very interesting. It's a must-see. Everybody needs to check it out. Best UFO sightings of May 2012 at anonymousfo.com. And then if anybody wants to comment to me, they can send me an email at starseedhotline.com. I'd be interested to know what experiences or sightings our listeners are having if they want to share that.
And that would be Anastasia at starseedhotline.com.
Yes. What did I?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well,
yes.
That's okay. You just left out your name. I want to make sure that everyone got that. It's kind of understood that it's,
yes.
You know,
yes.
Your name
Anastasia.
And Starseed Hotline.
Yes.
Okay.
So,
well,
that's
you
something.
Know,
yeah.
My comment is that I'm kind of feeling that the government will be the very last people to actually say, okay, we admit it, you know. But we don't really need them to tell us what our own eyes can see. We don't need them to tell, you know, to validate what the rest of the world is already believing.
Well, you know, that is just so profound, what you just said. Because really what we're all about is the raising of our own consciousness and seeing the truth for ourselves. And quite frankly, I agree with you, institutions that engage in deception for whatever reason are not likely to reverse their positions easily. But that's not what this is about, because as we go into higher consciousness for the planet and for the people on the, especially for Starseed, we're here to make this difference. It's up to us to know the truth and to document the truth and to be the truth and to speak the truth. And the truth will take care of itself. We don't need really anybody else to tell us what's true. And this will be the big revolution in consciousness among mm-hmm. humanity for perhaps the first time in recorded history anyway, where people are not looking to outside sources to tell them what is and is not true. This will be a first, because we are going to evolve to the extent that we know the truth and we see the truth and we accept it, because the system tends to perpetrate the illusions. That's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're all about is busting those illusions. And to do that, we have to live in our own truth first, find that, accept it, and embrace it. And that way we pave the way. It becomes like a domino effect where one person's energy influences the other upon the other. And this is a global initiative among Starseed to magnify the truth by just, first of all, we do that by recognizing it for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know, Lavendar's famous saying is that truth knows its own source.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
So everyone will recognize the truth from their own source.
Absolutely. And I will tell you that in my work with clients, incidentally, and if I'm going on too long, please tell me when Dr. Meg gets on. But I wanted to say to you that in my work with clients, I'm hearing reports over many years, by the way, since probably the early 90s, maybe late 80s, people reporting to me dreams of mass UFO sightings in the sky. Well, when I saw this particular video here from May, these are the kinds of film recordings that people have described to me that they've been seeing in dreams for the last 20 years. Now,
wow.
there is a clip on here that shows, I mean, the sky is full of craft. It's just astonishing. So people have been, you know, picking up on this clairvoyantly in a prescient way through their dream state and otherwise, of what's happening right now, what's happening right now. And so we all have an awareness within us if we can just set aside our logical and arguing mind. Now, of course, we do have to have mind in balance with our hearts, but we do have to use our reason, of course. But the arguing mind wants to perpetuate the dream world, but the soul and the deeper levels of consciousness already know the truth, and that comes out a lot in our dreams. Because that's the deepest level that's being accessed. And many, many starseed, I just talked to someone the other day who felt that they were dreaming when they were actually lifting out of their bodies to do work in the astral. So a lot of our starseed, perhaps all, at least on a regular basis, are doing a lot of astral work in the spirit when they go to sleep. So there's a lot of activity going on, and if we can become very centered in a meditative practice is absolutely essential to personal growth. I'm sorry, but there's just no way to get around it. You know, the world will press you. I don't have time. I can't do that. But that is what everyone is going to have to do if they're really going to get plugged into their personal power and awaken from within to the truth that they hold, and also to what they're doing on a soul level to help the planet awaken. But I kind of lost my train of thought. I was going to tell you something connected to that.
Yeah.
But
well, the people in having their dreams, they've been preparing the way, just like Hollywood puts out movies where you can go look, and there's so much truth in movies that are being sold as, you know, science fiction, just to kind of
desensitize,
you know, ease it in, give it to you in the form of entertainment. And it's kind of similar when they're giving it to people in dreams 10 or 20 years before it happens, so that it's not quite so shocking or unfamiliar or, you know, coming out of left field.
Well, it also triggers awakening, because the person will say, "Wow, I dreamed that. There's something to this." Puts them on high alert. They come to attention, and I think that's part of the awakening process. It tells them this is time.
What a beautiful and amazing time that we live in now, isn't it, ladies?
It is amazing.
I'm so grateful to be here, even when things get really, really tough, and that normal day-to-day third dimension stuff seems like it's just going to consume me. I look up and all of a sudden, there's just such amazing proof that we are just right where we need to be, and that these are exciting times to begin.
Absolutely. And I say, let's try to remain in a state of joy. The Dalai Lama once said that we can be, according to him, that you can identify a person's level of enlightenment by the amount of joy that they contain. And the further along the path I get, the more I see that that's true. So the darker the world gets, the more we need to radiate the light, love, and laughter and joy, because really that is what is behind all of it, ultimately. We come
from
joy. Mm-hmm. And that's our challenge, too, because as people get heavy and over and oppressed and things get more difficult, when we feel joy in our hearts, when it comes through our eyes, when we extend the love, this is what's going to hold it together and pull other people up. This is what we're about, bringers of good news and of the light that heals all souls. Everyone is loved. Everyone has the right to live their soul path and to enjoy existence and to have freedom and to have expression and to know the truth. And since the world at large won't give the truth to them, we need to be the truth, and that sets them free. And a little bit at a time, those around us begin to open to possibilities that they could never allow themselves to think of before, because we're all one greater family. Starseed is a family in and of itself, a beautiful family, but all of humanity, we are all a family.
That's so true. And it really comes down to finding the grace within you, you know, that's
absolutely.
Just in every aspect, every chance you get,
you know,
to try to find the grace in a situation, either in yourself or in others.
That is a beautiful word, Ariel, that we don't hear often enough, and I love that word, and I love the principle of it. Grace is a very real divine force. And we can ask for grace, and we build our grace through the goodness that we extend to others, and grace is like a bank account. And I just love that you brought that up before. And it's a wonderful thing for all of us to think about. Grace is a wonderful word. It represents a wonderful, wonderful energy. And when we think we can't do better, you know, or we're stuck, all we have to do is call upon that grace. And it answers. It comes.
It does, yeah, and it goes both ways. It emanates from and it comes to. So if you keep it going in both directions, you're well on your way.
Right.
Well,
right.
I'm looking here while we're talking. I'm looking at the switchboard, and I don't see that Dr. Meg is with us yet. So she might have been possibly detained unexpectedly. So I'm thinking, Lavendar, what do you think, that we should go ahead and
let
hear...
me give her a quick call. I'm going to hang up and I'm going to call her real quick.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. We'll do that, because once we start Jana's interview, then she won't be able to drop by like she had planned.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what? When you were talking about the Venus transit, it made me think that because it's the patterns that I see when I'm looking at people's charts,
and I
see so many of them, and I really get and I know this happens to Lavendar too, where you start seeing patterns, and of course we'll never be able to figure out what they all mean, but I am amazed at how many, and I'm just seeing a cross-section of my, you know, our little part of the global population, how many people are with star markings indicating that their natural state has to do with the divine feminine, with balancing the divine feminine and the divine masculine. Not only, it's not only between, you know, the boys and the girls, but it's helping men find the divine feminine within themselves and helping women find the divine masculine within themselves, that it should be in balance both inside and outside in the world. And when that comes back into balance, that's really when we will have the world that we've been hearing about with, you know, 1,000 years of peace.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. So much is hinging upon that.
And I think, this is just my opinion, but I think that this Venus transit is very influential in assisting that balancing process in bringing, I mean, like Sierra said, the air, the sunlight was you know, golden and pink.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's not about divine feminine,
mm-hmm.
then I don't know what is.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I'm just seeing all these patterns and realizing that there must be literally hundreds and hundreds of thousands of starseed whose mission, who are working on the same mission, which is the balancing of the divine feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I mean, nobody has to do it all by themselves. We are all working together for that eventuality. And I do think that this Venus transit in conjunction with this, with the eclipse, in conjunction with both the solar and the lunar eclipse, that this is going to activate a lot of good, positive changes. And with that, we have Dr. Meg on the switchboard. So without further ado, we are going to say good evening to Dr. Meg Blackburn-Losey, as soon as that little thing stopped spinning. Okay, that thing spun for about 5 seconds there, but you're on the air now.
Hey, girl, sorry I'm late. I was just talking with Richard Dolan. Oh, my God, what a conversation that was.
Uh-huh.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me back for a minute and letting me pop in.
Oh,
I
love
you guys.
Love it.
Yeah, nothing like a show where you could just visit for a few minutes, right?
Well, sure. You know, it's our weekly little, you know, what they call them, coffee clutches, when you get together and just talk about things
yeah.
that matter to you. Then
you guys
yeah.
are such world travelers. I hear you've just been had an amazing trip to France, and I wish I could have been there with you.
Oh, so do we. So do we. But, you know, France isn't going anywhere, so maybe some future point. But, yeah. I mean, talk about world traveler. I mean, you don't hold still very long, do you?
Not much at all. You know, I'm going to be going to England next month for the crop circle journey again this year, and I'm really psyched because I have a feeling that something amazing is going to happen this year with them, whether it's a piece of information or the way they're doing the formations. I don't really know, but I have a great sense that I just could not go this year.
Oh.
So,
well,
yeah.
I wish I were going with you.
I wish you were, too. And, by the way, I missed you in Atlanta. I did
yeah.
try to catch you.
Yeah. We were getting ready for the trip, and it was just, you know, just bad timing, but didn't work timing. Give us the details. How do, you know, people want to find out more about your trip.
Oh, yeah,
are
sure.
Do you still have spaces open?
I do. We had a couple of cancellations, which opened the door a little bit wider this last week. Somebody had a family emergency or something and couldn't make it, so that opened up a couple even more spots. But it's July the 15th through, I believe, the 27th or 28th,
and we're going to be doing the whole crop circle thing. It's a blast. It's a madcap adventure because we're tying into the hot circle crop or crops. I can't talk. The crop circle hotline there every morning, and we even discovered a new one in our group last year. So we're really on it, and we have a driver that knows when we say stop the bus, he hits the brakes, and it's just hilarious. It's just hilarious. And besides that, I rented Stonehenge one morning at sunrise, the whole thing. And when you do that, they let you go in inside the rocks, not make you stand, you know, by the ropes like they do all the tourists. And last year we had an amazing ceremony there, and I'm sure I'll come up with something unique this year as well. We're going to be doing the Glastonbury Well. We're going to go to the tour, some amazing shopping, I might add. And, gosh, where else are we going? We're going to be in Brighton for the first couple nights so everybody can sleep off their jet lag right there at the on the edge of the English Channel, and there's a beautiful beach there. And we just have the best time, so little ghost hunting, we do that. Last year, our bus driver took a bunch of the group out in the middle of the night, literally, to this really old church there in Avebury, and somebody actually caught a plasma on their photograph of a presence that came in. So that was exciting. And I mean, you know, you put a bunch of like-minded people together and you know what happens. It's just amazing. So I do hope. The only thing with this trip is the final registration date is June the 15th, because after that date, whatever rooms we have not filled, we have to give back because of the Olympics. And we got rooms at last year's rates, thank God. I had the foresight. But they quadruple the room costs when they take them back. And I don't know that I'll be able to take any latecomers this year at the same price. So just giving everybody a heads up on that. And if you want the full information, just go to Spirit Light, SPIRITLITE.com, my website, and go to my schedule and scroll down. There's a whole information page and for, you know, who to contact and how to get signed up and that kind of thing. So anyway. It's all good.
Great. Well, when, you know, we only had about 48 hours in England after we left France, and as we were going across, it happened to be Catherine's birthday. And
I heard that little bird.
Yeah, she wanted to see a crop circle and a UFO for her birthday, and what was it, about less than maybe 10 minutes? Do you remember, Sierra? After we left Stonehenge, about 8 miles outside of Stonehenge, I guess, we looked over and it's like, oh my God! And Sierra got a picture of this crop circle.
It was amazing. It was amazing. At the same time, both Catherine and I were sitting on the left-hand side because you know they do everything backwards there in England. I'm just joking. So the driver's on the right side, and I'm in the front and the passenger side on the left side. And we're driving on the left side of the road. It was all a very new and very exciting experience. And at the same time, both Catherine and I went, stop! There's a cross circle right there. It was amazing.
That's phenomenal. You know, they're very accommodating about that. They were, when we were on our way over last time, I started having visions before we got, I flew into Scotland first, and spent a few days sleeping off my own jet lag, and then went on to London to meet everybody. And on the way there, I started seeing images of designs and stuff, and as soon as we got off the plane and I could turn my iPad on, I got on the crop circle site, and there the circles that had happened that day, it was actually that night while we were flying, were exactly what I had seen, and I was like, oh, this is cool. And then later, my birthday was at the end of that journey, and the night before my birthday, I said, I want you to make me something special, and I want you to do something that I will understand that you really are talking to me, because this had been going on for 2 weeks, you know, and as weird and awesome as I can be with my my strange gifts, sometimes you still got to have a validation, you know. And I got up that morning, and I looked, and there had only been one. And it was this huge 500-yard-wide serpent. And it had certain geometries in it and stuff. I still have the picture. It's amazing. Well, what nobody knew was that in my medicine, my mesa, which is the, you know, like your medicine bag from Peru that I got from one of the Andean shamans there's a serpent carved out of stone that looked very much like the crop circle that was drawn, and nobody but me knew that was in there. So that was just mind-blowing.
Whoa.
They really do talk to you. Whoever's doing this really is telepathing and projecting images, and I really think that that's how, you know, they say, well, a lot of these are man-made. Well, where are people getting these ideas? You know, how are they getting this? And Colin Andrews will tell you the same thing. He met us over there last time, and he was pointing out that if it's in the consciousness, we're going to pick it up, you know. So that was kind of interesting. And this year, Cheryl Rose Hall and her husband Toby are going to be connecting with us. And I don't know who else yet, but she's a phenomenal artist, and they live in Glastonbury part-time. So they're going to hook up with the group at least part of the time. And they're retired tour guides from over there for years and years and know all the secret places. So I can't wait to see what they have to talk to us about.
Cool. Well, I hope you take lots of video.
Yeah.
And, I know that there are people that are capturing crop circle energies in water.
I haven't seen that. I've seen Dr. Emoto's work, but I haven't seen it like what you're saying.
Yeah, we had two different people, unrelated, as guests on the show, and both of them were doing crop circle tonics. And I mean, it was just a fascinating concept because, of course, electromagnetic energy can be held in water.
Well, you could, I suppose, capture the essences homeopathically like you can anything else.
Well, get your little homeopathy bottle out there.
Get my essence going, huh?
Yeah, get your essence
That's
going.
Not really
there.
My thing, but it's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, yes. Well, I just know it's going to be another fantastic adventure because you're there. And that kind of stuff just kind of follows you around.
It does. But yeah. I'm just a big kid, you know. I get so excited like everybody else. And we go stomping right out there. Of course, we're very considerate. And we always give a donation to whoever the crop owners are. They usually have a box out. You know, we're very good about that because we don't want to destroy anything. But it's just amazing getting out there and standing in them and feeling the energy of them and what it does to your body and even your mind. I mean, we were in one, and I started tasting metal in my. And it depends on where you're standing too. Just not anywhere in the circles does it. It's like only certain spots, and I don't know why that is exactly. I have a few ideas, but I started tasting metal in my mouth, and then I couldn't have a straight thought. I couldn't think straight. I got a little nauseated. I got very disoriented, and I don't think I could have even found my way out of the darn thing. And I hollered, and nobody else was feeling it. I said, come stand right here. And everybody that I put there had the same experience. The energy was so intense in this one area. And it was one that was kind of Mayan-looking, and it had these two long, like, pincher-looking design, one on either side of the inside of the circle. And when you stood right between the pinchers, just outside of them, that's where it was. So I figured it had to do something with the way the energy was directed. Maybe we should, you know, pay more attention to those things.
Yeah, well, when the decryption key is discovered, and I'm not sure that it would be the same for every crop circle.
No, I don't think so.
There's no standard language that you, because I'm sure that the circles are being made by many different races.
Well,
do you feel that?
They're multidimensional communications, and I'm not sure, but I would have to almost agree with you just because of the differences in them, and particularly certain of the designs. You've got certain trends in the designs. There was one that did have, was interpretable mathematically, And when you look at what it is, it's just absolutely mind-blowing. It describes the difference between us and an alien race by differences of chromosomes, and actually has pictures of humans and whoever these other people are in the circle. It's just unbelievable when you look at it. I forget what they called it. They named it something, but I saw a whole talk about it, and I was just in awe. of how somebody could so technically and beautifully communicate something so powerful to us as human beings. They're not just pretty pictures.
Right, right. Yeah. It's not like they're sitting up there going, ha, 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 watch this one. You know, this was really going to confuse them. You know, there's mm-hmm. definite intent and meaning and purpose. And it is, you know, like you said, it's multidimensional communication that
mm-hmm.
is totally meant to help us gain more understanding, more not only of ourselves and our planet, but our place in the solar system,
yeah,
in the galaxy,
seriously.
You know, the universe, and go all the way out.
Well, there's also some pretty strange and interesting events happening in a certain area, and it's not a story that I'm working on directly, but I'm real aware of, and I'll only say this much: there is a stargate that has opened in the area. There are beings and animals coming and going out of thin air, and there are certain traits. I actually met these same beings about 10 years ago in North Carolina, and they're now showing up in England to a police officer who actually took some pictures. And Colin Andrews is actually the one that's working on this story, so I don't want to tip his hand too much. But there's some pretty, very cool, slick, interesting stuff happening over there. And I'm like, I'm going to go stand there and hope one of them will show up and have a conversation with me.
Well, if they do, would you ask them a question for me?
I will.
There has to be a reason why it's predominantly happening in England. Now, do you
yeah.
know? Do you know?
Well, even further than that, not just in England, but most of them, like 80% of them, happen within a 5-mile radius of Avebury. Avebury is a stone hinge, very much like Stonehenge, only it is a mile and a half in diameter. And there's rumors that that was built by giants. And my theory is, and I'm going to be publishing this in the near future, but my theory is that the hinges are replications of earlier crop circles, earlier circles that were drawn. You know, the earliest one is noted in literature in 1600 and something. And to me, the stone hinges are exact replications or the first crop circles. I'm still working on that. But isn't that fascinating?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I do know that from when Colin Andrews was on our show, that there is like a triangle that almost, like you say, like 80% of the crop circles occur within that golden triangle, so to speak.
Yep.
Between Stonehenge and Avebury, and there's some place, I forget the...
Silbury Hill? Was it Silbury Hill? I forget.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was thinking Salisbury, but that's not it.
Maybe Salisbury. Yeah. Because Silbury Hill is kind of in the middle. It's right near Avebury, so it was probably Salisbury. You're probably right.
Well, but
I get the two mixed up.
I was just going to say the crop circle that we saw, and I looked it up, was Yarnbury Castle, Winterbourne Stoke, Wiltshire. And that was reported on April 28th, but we saw it on May when we went. So it was really exciting, though.
I'm going to look it up. They have an app for that.
Yeah, I'm on here now.
Yeah, Wiltshire is the name of the shire that.
Yeah, I know. That's where a lot of them happen. Wiltshire
yeah.
is a very, very volatile area for crop circles.
But it was concentric circles only pinned to one side of it. Wasn't it, Sierra? It was like there were concentric circles, but they weren't.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I've not actually seen one like this before. It was so simple, but it's so complicated. And it's in the rapeseed vines. And so it's the yellow look. And then it's a dark, thick circle on the outside, and it's twirled like it's braided together going counterclockwise. Well, actually, up one side.
Was that
the
Jubilee plantation one?
Farmer. It said that the farmer does not want you visiting the farmer.
No, was it Chair Hill Wiltshire?
It says Yarnberry Castle in our Winterburn Stoke.
Oh, Winterburn Stoke. Okay. I'm looking at the wrong one.
Winterburn Stoke. And then it's got these, like, it's like crescent from left to right on the bottom, a smaller one, but when it gets partway, it goes from a negative to a positive, and then there's another circle, and then it goes from a positive to a negative. It's very complicated, but it looks very, very simple. It's just really amazing. So if you're looking for it, I'm actually on
CropCircleConnector.com.
Yeah, CropCircleConnector.com.
That's
and
the best site.
Yarnberry Castle in our Winterburn Stoke.
There it is. I see it.
April 28th, Saturday.
I love it when there's an app for that.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's very complicated. And then on the left-hand side where it meets the thicker outer circle, it's like it's been braided over bare. So there's like a code in this. It's almost as if you would need to make a negative of this just to try to see what the code is in this circle. It's pretty complicated.
Yeah, they can be,
and as and for what we were told, because it was not in the regular, you know, the wheat-type field, this was in the yellow, the canola, it's called rapeseed, but...
I heard that there was one in a rape field, and that's really rare.
It is, and that's I'm sure that's the one we saw, because there's not that many. And
it is.
Was very early.
Yeah.
It was very early, and we were, I mean, we were praying, although it's like, oh, please, you know, we want to see a cross circle. Yeah. And, I mean, of course, we didn't get to go out and walk around in it, but we did get to stand, you know, the side of the road and let Sierra take a picture.
It's
and
really
then right
amazing
after
when
that,
you...
right after that, Catherine, or was it right before, that Catherine was taking a picture of a interesting cloud
it
for her.
It was right after that that she actually...
Right.
Took a picture
after
of
that,
the craft. Yeah.
She got three very clear photos of the craft with the dome on top.
That's what Lavendar told me. I hope she'll send me a copy of that.
Oh, I'm sure she will.
I'll send her an email.
That was, it was, you know, England is just wonderfully mysterious and just amazing place to be. And I would love to go on a crop circle tour. You just go in the summertime, right?
Well, yeah, that's when the crops are. That's why
that's
they don't
the best,
them.
That's the best hunting. Yeah.
Because what happens is they mow them all down.
Yeah.
And it's really, really sad to go there and see one day. We were there late in the season last year, and it's really sad to go there one day and see it, and the next day it's mowed down. I mean, oh, my God. It's just like they all go to crop circle heaven eventually. They turn into bales of hay, you know.
Yeah.
The little tombstones of crop circles.
Yeah.
I
have
a sick sense of humor.
I'm surprised that that you said that it's been the first one was like in the 17th century.
Shoot, I can't remember the exact year, but yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Sierra, that one at West Woodhay Down near Inkpen in Wiltshire on the 29th of July, that's when it was reported. That was the one they gave me for my birthday. It's still on here.
Ooh.
In fact, you can scroll down and see the ones we went to, all the ones in July. We were in all of those. Last year, if anybody's listening that wants to go to CropCircleConnector.com and click on Latest Circles and go to last July. They're still up on the current page, and you can see all the ones that we actually walked in last year. There was like a dozen or so that we were actually in. So,
wow.
Sorry, I'm looking at these, remembering how cool it was.
Yeah. Well, I will, you know, definitely be with you at some future trip. I would love to do that. Just absolutely love to do that.
I'd love to have you there.
Yeah. Well, and once again, everybody, if you want to learn more about all that Dr. Meg has to offer, it's not just about crop circle tours. She's got wonderful books, Touching the Light and The Children of Now, and the index of books that you've got, the catalog of books is in there. Just excellent best-selling book. So that is spiritlight.com, spiritlite.com.
Right.
And also you have a special website for touchingthelight.com.
Touchinglight.org.
Or .org.
As if you
want to
be a certified practitioner of the healing work, yeah. Oh, and I have something very cool coming up. Can I give you an exclusive on this?
Absolutely.
There's going to be an app for that. for the Living Light cards into this summer. If you have an iPhone or an iPad, you'll be able to have the Living Light cards alive on your gadgets.
Whoa.
So I'm really excited about
okay.
that.
Okay, you heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, you did, actually.
Well,
I just got together with the company this week and got it all worked out, and they're saying mid-August or before the 1st of September they should have it ready. So I'm
excellent.
Excited. Yep.
Excellent. Well, we're really glad to hear that, and so glad that you stopped by and shared some of your precious time with us.
Well, thanks to all of you so much. I love you back, and I'm so grateful to all of your listeners, and I love how they talk back and forth between us. So take care of you guys, and hopefully I'll be having you back on my show very shortly.
Excellent. We'll look forward to that, Dr. Meg, and have a wonderful trip. Can't wait to see the pictures.
Thanks. They'll be on Facebook as we go.
Okay. Excellent.
Okay, take care. Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. That's going to be an exciting trip. So if anyone has the inclination, I guess she's only got one or two spots available. But yeah,
fantastic. Wish I could go.
Yeah, well, one future day.
Yes.
One future day. So I am now going to introduce our featured guest, Jeanna Dut, and that's the author of a book called White Lie, and we had the pleasure of meeting her while we were in France, and the book was just so amazing. Lavendar had read it on the airplane home and could not put it down, said it was one of the most powerful books she's ever read, so doesn't get much better than that. So here we have our pre-recorded interview with Lavendar and Jeanna Dut.
As many of you know, we just got back from our trip to France, and it was an incredible trip. And one of the highlights of the trip was meeting Jeanna Dut, who wrote the book White Lie. And I have her today from France. We're recording this, and I just wanted to invite her to come on and absolutely thrill us with some of the highlights from her book called White Lie. And I must say that when I got on the plane to come home, and it was a 9-hour flight, and when I left London, I opened up the book, and I was so riveted for so many hours, I could not put it down. And when we landed in Atlanta, I finally had, just as the wheels dropped down, I was on the very last page. And I thought, oh my goodness, what an absolute wonderful, wonderful ride this has been for me. And it was so exciting to read the book and see some of the places that I had already visited on this trip. And when I closed the book and looked out the window, I said, this has to be a movie. And so I'm hoping that those of you that are listening to this radio show will go on Amazon and click White Lie. And so with that, I'd like for you to come on and say hello to our listeners.
Hello, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's just my divine pleasure to have you here. And if you would, let's just start by you. I saw your press page, and if you would, let's just read from your press page so that the audience will have some idea about what the book is about. So go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. White Lie, not just a thriller book. The truth is out there, and it is much more unbelievable than fiction. 30 years ago, Raiders of the Lost Ark exploded at the box office. The adventures of Indiana Jones were pure fantasy, but the man he was based on was very real. His name was Otto Rahn. Indiana Jones is a pop culture phenomenon. Spielberg sorted that, making the charismatic relic hunter, who was willing to risk life and limb to outsmart the Nazis and beat them to discovering the Ark of the Covenant and the Holy Grail, impossible to forget. Was Indy pure fiction? Not quite. White Lie is a story about forbidden history, hidden relics, and the adventures of a group of people who get involved into something much bigger than themselves. It combines the mission of the Knights Templar, the warrior monks, who legend claimed discovered a sacred treasure beneath Solomon's Temple, with the relic hunter Otto Rahn. Rahn's search for the Holy Grail in the years leading up to World War II, chronicled in this book, Crusade Against the Grail, brought him to the attention of Heinrich Himmler. Eventually, Rahn himself became a victim of the Nazi regime, and in White Lie, he gets to tell his real story. Many respected researchers believe Otto Rahn was the role model for Indiana Jones. Where did Da Vinci Code stop? Jeanne d'Arc has a bit of Indy in her too. Fascinated by unraveling mysteries at a young age, she settled in a mysterious part of southern France, where she befriended author Henry Lincoln, the man whose work inspired Dan Brown to write the Da Vinci Code. Becoming a tour guide in the region, she happened upon many incredible clues that would lead to her amazing discoveries and create the basis for her new book, White Lie, which is about finding the true grail. The success of the Da Vinci Code showed that the world was ready to explore what other parts of history have been hidden from us all. What Dan Brown did for the bloodline legend, Jeanne d'Arc hopes to do that for the original teachings of Jesus. Jeanne has made it her life's work to uncover what was once hidden, connect the dots, and with solid research, risk taking and rolling up her sleeves to bring its fascinating story to light. She simply continued where the Da Vinci Code stopped. Digging for the truth behind the real Otto Rahn, Jeanne read everything available on the subject and talked to people who knew him personally. Stumbling upon an amazing documentary called The Secret Glory, produced by filmmaker Richard Stanley, Jeanne felt he was someone she had to speak with. It was clear that Richard was an expert on Rahn, the man and his mission, and had gained access to those who knew him best. Mr. Stanley, however, proved virtually impossible to find. One day, as luck would have it, a friend invited Jeanne to come to Montségur, a mysterious mountain in the south of France. He knew of someone who could show her one of the caves that Otto Rahn visited frequently. Her tour guide, however, turned out to be the elusive filmmaker Richard Stanley himself. Later, Mr. Stanley generously opened up his Rahn archive to Jeanne, which allowed her to complete White Lie and tell the true story of Otto Rahn, the relic hunter that would one day become the role model for Indiana Jones. The Knights Templar Secret Quest. From 1129 to 1307, the Knights Templar fought fiercely alongside the Crusaders to conquer Jerusalem and take back the Holy Land from the Muslims. The Templars, however, had a second agenda, a secret quest which would later create the far-reaching and romantic myth that they had actually found the Ark of the Covenant beneath Solomon's Temple. But was it simply a myth, or could there be some truth behind it? White Lie looks beyond the myth, following historical clues, which would eventually lead to great discoveries. Grail lore redefined. The period between the 11th and 14th century was a violent time, the age of the Crusades, of wars and plagues. Because life was so bleak during this time, people tended to hold on to their beliefs in the supernatural, to give them hope, like the relic of a saint, or the tales of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, especially the tale of Parsifal and the Grail. In this atmosphere, the Grail legends were born. Grail lore was popular because it was a means to hold on to dreams, hope, and the possibilities of miracles in a medieval Europe where life itself was hard and short. The traveling minstrels, called the troubadours, were popular all over Europe, and especially in the southern provinces of France. They sang of courtly love and chivalry. Thanks to them, the Grail legends were spread all over Europe through their songs. The first story of Parsifal and the Grail and the wounded Fisher King was told by troubadour Guillaume de Provence sometime in the 12th century. Then it was copied and shaped by Chrétien de Troyes, and only a few decades later by the German writer Wolfram von Eschenbach. Centuries later, Otto Rahn became enamored with the Grail, and believed there was more to the story than a minstrel's song. He felt they were very real and set out to find proof. The Cathars, the Grail, and fairy tales. Otto Raum followed the Grail path to the south of France, in one hand holding the Parsifal story by Wolfram von Eschenbach, and in the other the story of the Cathars of Occitania. To Raum, the Cathar castle of Montségur was the Grail castle Montsalvage from the Parsifal story, and the Cathars themselves were the legendary guardians of the Grail. But instead of a physical Grail, Otto found something much more profound and life-altering. The female principle had been lost since the beginning of Christianity, because from that moment on, God would be seen as a male deity. This original belief in a God that was both divinely male and female has always been guarded by storytellers, artists, painters, sculptors, masons, and many secret brotherhoods throughout the centuries, hidden cleverly in paintings, sculptures, architecture, and most profoundly, in fairy tales. Otto found out that this lost female principle of God is the true Grail, kept alive in the Hermetic teachings and by those who had chosen to hold on to a much older form of Christianity. One of these groups, the Cathars, known as the Pure Ones, were burned at the stake by the Church for these beliefs. Many centuries later, Raum was transformed by what he had learned and counted himself a believer. His patrons, however, wanted the physical Grail and the power it was purported to hold, a relic Raum just could not find. The mystical message of white light. Eventually, the path of the author has led her to write white light, weaving these seemingly separate subjects into one big adventurous web. But the book also contains a mystical message for the reader to discover. The Da Vinci Code, Angels and Demons, and the Lost Symbol spent many weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, proving there is a critical mass curious about what has been hidden, and fiction has proven a clever way to present the facts. Throughout the ages, good and bad have always fought. The Black Army against the White Army, millennium after millennium, believing that the world would end at some point in time. But what is it all about? Not religion or politics, not power or possession. It is about conduct, about choice. Love knows no religion, race, or politics, for it rules the realm of the heart.
I love this. This is absolutely wonderful. I am so glad that you read this for us and our audience, because the way it's been written, it really gives a full view of your book.
Well, thank you very much.
So you told me that it took you about 2 years to write this book.
Altogether.
And that you went through many trials and tribulations. I guess that you've probably gone through what we call trial by fire, because anytime you take on a project with this magnitude, it seems that that's just what happens. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about you as a child and the way that you were raised and grew up. When you were younger, did you have the feeling that someday that you would have an amazing adventure come into your life like this book? Did you have anything early on that gave you a clue to where you were going in your life?
I'll tell you a funny story. When I was 7 years old, I was in class. And I was in the Christian school because that was just, you know, the best one in town at that point. And my teacher once a week would read from the New Testament. And one week he would read something and the other week he would read something completely different. And I raised my finger and I said, you know, sir, I think this is contradiction. And he sent me out of class. And when I came home, my father told me, why were you sent out of class? Tell me. And I said, give me a Bible. And we found out that, you know, there was a certain contradiction between two gospels. And I was right. And from that moment on, I tried to double check everything that I learned at school, not just Christian lessons of biblical stories, but everything. I didn't trust anybody anymore. So when I grew older, you know, my friends were in discos and I was in libraries. And even when I was in a young age, everybody was playing a clay ashtray, and I was making cuneiform tablets. I was a little different from everybody in school, and I definitely knew that if I'd ever do anything, I would want to know exactly what happened in the first century, because that intrigued me. Because I guess that if you find out when you are young that something is not right, something is wrong, and there's something wrong in the teachings that you get at school, that you want to find out what's right, what is the truth behind all that. So from 7 years on, I think I've been researching the first century in particular and the history of mankind, and I was enthralled by everything hidden and secret, and eventually I even joined a secret order because I wanted to find out what these guys knew. And I'm still a member because I like it there. It's very, very interesting.
I understand. I can really relate. When I was 5 years old, I was also sent away from my Sunday school class, and you know, they brought in my parents and said, "What are you going to do with your child?" And they said, "What did she say?" And said, "Well, she asked us if any of us had ever seen God." And we told her that no, we hadn't. So she said, "Well, then I'm not going to be here. And if you haven't seen or talked to him, then I'm not going to be here." And she walked out. They said to my parents.
Oh.
So I can relate to that totally. So yeah, it's like I just know that sometimes we go through our lives investigating things because we know in our soul what's true and what isn't, what resonates as truth. Always say, you always know them by the fruits they bear. End of story.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a line out of the Bible, but it's very, very true. When somebody brings you roses, you know it. And when they bring you thorns, you know it. It's like it's instantaneous. And it's same with information. When something hits you at a core level, it's almost like your DNA and your whole body lights up. Some people say that the hair will, you know, rise up on their arm, or they get a chill or a quiver.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes for the person to identify truth when they hear it, because truth does know its own source. So now I'd like to ask you, were you doing tours? Tell us about the tours that you did before you wrote the book.
Well, I did a lot of individual tours, which means that people would hire me and take me in their car and as a tour guide in the region, usually one or two people. So that was very, very limited. These people, I took to all the places they wanted to see, because that's when you get flexible. You know, when you only have two people, you can just say, "Where do you want to go?" And I will tell you whatever I know about where we're going. So I went to all kinds of places: Rennes-le-Château, Carcassonne, Rennes-le-Bain, Bougarache, all the castles like Perpétuse, Puy-la-Rance, Quéribus, Montségur, Puy-Vert, lots of beautiful natural beauty, everything. And when I finished my stories, because I'm a storyteller, I'm not a, I don't really say dates and names because people won't remember it. You know, I tell the stories that are connected to this region. And when I finished one of those days, you know, people said, "Why don't you write a book? This is fantastic. This is great. You have to write a book." And then I had quite a big group. Of I think were almost 50 people from America, and I loved being their tour guide because this was a fantastic group. And there were two people on the bus, and one of them was a psychic, and he said, "He's going to write a book. It's about 300 pages." And I was, you know, smiling like, "Yeah, yeah, right." And then this strange thing happened. I had the inspiration for a story when I discovered something really, really big. This came to me first in the vision, and then I started to do some research on it, and it was true. And I was like, what? This has to be told. This story has to go out. This is something new. This is something everybody has to know. And you know what happened? I told you about me joining this secret order. Within months, it was part of my lessons. You know, I got it at home in my lessons. And I was like, what? I have to tell the world about this. This is great. This is fantastic material. We need to know. Everybody needs to know this. Why is this being kept secret? So,
are you referring to the Jesus teachings? Is that what you're referring to now?
I'm referring to, I think, about four happenings, but also really the core thing is about, of course, it's about Jesus and about his real teachings, because we're so busy trying to find out whether he was crucified or not, or what, who his mother was and everything. Why don't we look at what he taught us? Because the teachings that Jesus gave us, left us, are so pure and so beautiful. It's the Hermetic teachings, and we're just overlooking all that. And I think it should be brought back to everybody's attention, because it doesn't only help us get through life, it also makes us understand a little bit more about the connections between physica and metaphysica, nature and spirit, that I think we have lost throughout the ages. I think we must reconnect with our spiritual form.
I especially loved in the book the way that you presented the time travel aspect, going back, you know, in the time machine to the time of Christ. That really, as I read it, I was like looking through your eyes and living it. It was just, the way that you wrote was so beautiful. It was like you didn't tell a story, you showed a story. You know, that's the test of a terrific author, is to show people and not tell them, and you were able to do that. My next question is about, tell us about your time with Henry Lincoln, who inspired Dan Brown to write the Da Vinci Code.
I've known Henry Lincoln for quite a few years now. That is one of the benefits when you live in the region that he lives in, and you get to see each other, you know, almost every week. And sometimes, you know, he's just sitting in the village and there's nobody around him, and I go sit with him and I talk with him for hours on end, because this man is very, very wise, and he has incredible knowledge, and he teaches me to think out of the box, to not take everything as we see it, but to look beyond. And Henry Lincoln has a much bigger story to tell. And I know everybody knows him from Holy Blood, Holy Grail, but he has grown so much since then, and he has found out so many more things since then. He has discovered a beautiful geometry in the area where the sacred places, when you connect them, form pentacle and hexagram, which is a male and female symbol, and they sort of are attached to each other, which is beautiful. And this is something that happens all over the world, but it's also here in France, and it connects beautiful places. But it's like, you know, the Hermetic teachings were seen as heresy in the Middle Ages. And people were burned at the stake for just having the Kabbalah in their possession. So you can understand that some of the information of the Hermetic teachings had to be hidden really, really cleverly. So I think that the Hermetic teachings were also tattooed on the skin of the Mother Goddess, which means that sacred geometry here in the region. You have symbolism written down on the earth, star systems written down on the earth. And I think that is the beauty of the... sorry, my cat is coming. she's wondering where I am, which is so sweet. That is so sweet.
We love kitties, okay? I'm the I'm the Catwoman of the community here, so go ahead.
She's not even my cat, she's my neighbor. Anyway.
Okay.
I think that is one of the beauties. And Henry Lincoln has discovered most of this sacred geometry, which he refuses to call sacred because he's a scientific researcher. So he just says geometry. But he's very wise, and I pick his brain. I learned from him, and I learned to have discipline and not to take everything for granted and to look beyond. So all those years I've been talking to him, I've learned quite a lot, and I'm very grateful to him. And I think I have had more inspiration from him than Dan Brown could have had, because Dan Brown is more on the Bagan and Lee topics and not so much on the geometry. And I think I would like to really head out to the sacred geometry and the symbolism and the hermetic teachings that everybody tried so hard to keep and keep safe.
So does he still live in the area where you are now?
Yes, he lives very, very close to Rennes-le-Château. And he's still writing. He's still translating French books on the topic, and he's very active. And I have high respect for him.
I noticed that when we were in that area that that Jules Verne subject came up. And is there something you can share with us about what you know about Jules Verne in that area?
Jules Verne, he was even a Rosicrucian. He was a mystic. He loved writing children's books for children that were a little older, like 13, 14 years old. And we all know his books. And we all also know that he hit quite a few mystical messages in his writings for the ones that could recognize this. You have a book called Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And this is the book I think you're referring to. It could have been based on a mountain here, although in the book he talks about a mountain on Iceland. And, of course, you have to understand that around 1900, everybody thought that there was a portal on Iceland underneath a volcano going to a land deep underneath the earth crust. So whether it is the Bugarash mountain that Jules Verne was inspired by, I don't know, but it could be, because the same story is that the Bugarash mountain here close to Rennes-le-Bain is a portal, and that there are communities of people living underneath the mountain. But it is legend, and we have no solid proof, of course, of any movement inside the mountain. We only know that the views from the top are incredible.
While we were going through the area of Bucharest, we were told that this was an area where a lot of people are gathering because they think it's the end of the world. Can you give us some insight to what's actually going on at Bucharest?
Bucharest,
okay.
Bucharest is in
the... I'm sorry.
Otherwise, people think that it's the wrong place.
Okay.
the Bugarash Mountain is said to have inspired the story of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It's supposed to be the mountain that the main player in the story was creating from his potato mash and everything he had his hands on. And this was supposed to have been the mountain that would contain the UFO base. So everybody is now thinking that maybe the Bugarash is the place to be when the world comes to an end. And then they draw in the Maya calendar, which is supposed to end on the 21st of December this year. Although, other people have said that we still have 6,000 years to go. It is a sort of a meatloaf with several ingredients. You know, it's several stories to one place, which is really nice because you can believe anything. You can go there and believe that that would be the safe place to be in December. But there's not too much movement there right now. It's pretty quiet, quite little village. We haven't seen anybody suspicious yet. We're there quite a lot. But the mountain, I must admit, is a magnet because it has a certain charisma. It has a beauty that is way beyond every other mountains here in the area. It stands on its own. It is very old. It's part of the Corbière Massif. And it has its own charisma. It has its own reputation. And everybody's writing about it. The New York Times, lots of television stations are there. So the people that we see there are usually journalists or reporters or TV stations, but not too many other groups. It's really, really quite quiet. The house price has gone up, though. So if you want to buy a house there, then it's pretty costly. And they're even selling stones on eBay, which are really from Uber, which I think is hilarious. They're asking an arm and a leg for it, and you can't even prove they're from that mountain. So it's pretty hilarious. But altogether, it's a mountain of legends, and it's always been a mountain of legends, and I think it will always be a mountain of legends. So on its own, it has a powerful attraction.
So let me ask you about the Ark of the Covenant. Is this a place where people are looking in this area? Are there researchers still looking for the Ark of the Covenant, and is this one of the places?
I think a lot of people who are researching the enigma of Rennes-le-Château, which is the little village on the hilltop here in the neighborhood, they think that the Ark of the Covenant and the Holy Grail and many other treasures, and the treasures of Jerusalem, are all hidden underneath the church in Rennes-le-Château or somewhere in a cave very, very close by. The Bouguereche is one of the places that people are thinking of, but to really explore the caves there is very, very dangerous. And I know somebody who has been in there very, very deep, and they haven't seen anything, and it's not really easy to hide something there because it's damp and wet, and it's a very cold place and drafty place to hide something so valuable. It will, you know, deteriorate very, very quickly. So I don't think it would have been the ideal place to hide something in. And I think also a church vault would be very damp and wet. And you wouldn't really put something in there that is of incredible value if you want to keep it there for centuries. You would just store it there very, very temporarily. But suppose somebody did that a couple of centuries ago, or maybe the Knights Templar did that a couple of centuries ago. And they, the ones that knew it was there were killed. Then what? Then it stays there for a long time. So it can still be somewhere here. And that is the nicest thing about this region. You never really know until you find it. And if you don't find it, then maybe it still is here. It's not a proof that it's not here because there are so many places and so many church vaults, especially the church vault that is underneath a crumbled church, on top of which people have built a new church. So you can't get underneath there. You can't get to the old crypt. And that is something really, really strange because, you know, the Ark can be there. The Grail or the Grail Cup, the physical one, which was carried by noble families in the first century and before that, there can be a physical cup, absolutely. Maybe it's in a museum and we just don't know it was that one. You know, relics are funny things. It can be fake, it can be real, it can be real and we don't know it. It can be hidden somewhere and we don't know it. And this is also one of the attractions of this area.
Well, when I was reading your book, the way that you talked about the Ark of the Covenant and the story that you had running through the pages just kept me on my toe. I was like, I couldn't wait to turn the page to see where we're going to go next with it. So, yeah. So I really encourage all of our listeners to get your book, White Lie. Another question I'd like to ask you, on this journey, I was privileged to be on the grounds where Nostradamus had been living. Is there anything you can tell us about Nostradamus' home in that area there? Because I know that you probably took tours by his home.
Yes, it's one of the places that he lived. A lot of people don't know that he was originally a physician. He took care of people when they were ill, and he lost his own family, his wife and his children, in the times of the plague. And he didn't die of the plague, so he thought, what is the difference between me and my wife and kids? And why do I live? Why don't I get the disease? So he started to investigate, and this also brought him to places with healing water, like Alatlaban, which is a place of healing waters. There are thermal sources coming from the earth, and they have been discovered by the Romans. But of course they were already there when the Celts were in this region, and the Celts already used them, and they knew the sources were extremely healthy. So he was drawn to Alatlaban, and he studied the waters by studying his patients as well.
Well, I just really stood there in amazement looking at the area where his house was, and there was such a recollection of memories that just started flashing through me. That was the one place that I really felt like that I identified with when I was on this tour. And by the way, your husband Peter was our tour guide, and he was so wonderful to all of us. And I just wanted to mention that of all the people that I met on this trip, that he's just right up there on the top five on my list. So I just wanted to let you know how much I personally appreciated his love, time, and energy, and the way he conducted himself with our tour. It was just amazing. And I know that we met you on the last night, and now I wish I'd have met you on the first night.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, 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 yeah. So is there anything else that you would like to share with us, something new and different that maybe you haven't written about, or maybe that you're thinking about writing? Are you coming up with maybe another book after this one? Is there going to be a sequel?
Yes, there is going to be a sequel. I want to cover something that has been overlooked. I can't say much about it at the moment, but it will go back to a much more ancient time. And this will reveal a new mystery and a new secret.
Is this before Jesus?
That is before Jesus. This is way before Jesus.
Okay.
And it will reveal a couple of things that may have kept Jesus busy for a little while as well, because he also studied that period in time. So I think it would be a fantastic sequel, or should I say prequel?
Yeah. Okay. I understand that several people are talking to you about doing this as a movie. So I just really do hope that through your discovery of the right people, that they will be able to show this story in the light and the way that you have written it.
Yes.
Because to do otherwise would not do it justice.
Okay.
But I'm just so happy that you took the time to be with me today. And we're going to record this and play it later. And I certainly will let you know when we are going to air it. And usually we have the guests come on for questions later, but since you're in France and since you'll be asleep at that time, that you won't be able to come on and answer questions to our audience. But so I just wanted to tell you so much how much I appreciated you being on the show, and that I hope to stay in contact with you. And so With that, I'll turn it back over to you, Ariel.
Thank you very much.
Well, that was fascinating, Lavendar. And Anastasia and Sierra, let's open it up now for some discussion.
Well, that was a beautiful interview. Thank you, Lavendar. That was outstanding. And my impression is that this woman is so thoughtful and spiritual and well-spoken, very articulate. The book sounds absolutely fascinating. I've been looking at her website while during the interview off and on while I'm listening, and man, that's just really good stuff. That is exciting stuff. I've got to get that book.
Well, I hope that everyone else feels the same way. And we were just, as Lavendar said, we didn't get to meet her until the last night, and just a delightful person. So we do not have Jana with us for questions, but we have had different topics that we've discussed tonight. So if anyone would like to make a comment or ask a question about anything that we've discussed tonight, you have to press 1 on your keypad so that we know that you want to come on the air. So we do have a pretty full switchboard. So if you want to have a question or a comment, please let us know.
Well, I'd like to bring up briefly that I just think it's delicious that she discovered that the Grail is the feminine energy, the divine feminine. And she's absolutely right that this has been known by the mystics for ages. And this is, as you mentioned earlier, Ariel, this is about bringing the planet back into balance and bringing the full spiritual truth forward. So this is all about raising consciousness, and she's doing this through this book that she's written. And interestingly enough, as we look back onto the records of Jesus, there are a number of scholars that interpret Jesus as having been a shaman and as working in tandem with Jesus. The Magdalene also would have been a shaman in that sense. And the principle of shamanism is the balancing of the male and female energy, as well as what this author was talking about, the connection with nature, which is really critical right now in our world. And is so we're so completely veered away from a connection to nature. We live in artificial environments. We depend on artificial everything to sustain ourselves. We get our food from grocery stores. We do everything from an artificial perspective. And one of the things that I struggle with in my clients is to get them to spend time in nature. And that's not too difficult for starseed because they're naturally attracted to nature. But all of this comes full circle in the transformation that this world must undergo in order to survive and to go into the next level. So this is all part of it. It's a piece of the puzzle. And here she was inspired throughout her life experiences and prepared to write this, which is just another way to open people's consciousness to the question is, what is true here? And have we been told the truth? Well, perhaps not. Perhaps there's so much more.
Oh, well, I'm sure there's so much more. And,
so
you know,
much
I just,
more.
I was listening to you talk, I was kind of drawing an analogy that just as the divine feminine energies and whether it's in women or in men have been so suppressed and put down over the years, and the same thing that has happened with nature, which is, I mean, the planet itself is a feminine
absolutely.
Energy.
Gaia,
and, you know, Mother
absolutely.
Nature, Mother
yes.
Nature, and all the qualities of the physical earth and the cycles of the year and everything of nature is of a feminine quality. And just as our civilization has ignored the divine feminine in humans, it's done the same thing in ignoring the planet. So I'm just wondering, it's like, huh.
It all goes
so,
hand
you know,
in hand.
Yeah,
another
it does.
Thing, yeah. And another thing we need to be thinking about, too, is it isn't the divine masculine that has caused the problem. It's
no.
the ego masculine. And so as we move forward, and men are often flailing around trying to figure out how they fit into all of this, but the divine feminine is nothing without the divine masculine. And so, yes, we do have those both of those polarities in us as androgynous beings to start with. We incarnate into gendered bodies. But from a celestial perspective, we have all of that in us. But in the 3D, as we seek for partners or we seek for balance in all that we do and in the healing of the planet, it's going to require men who are in touch with their divine masculine and feminine and women who are in touch with their divine feminine and masculine. So it's all about balancing within balancing. It's
absolutely.
Like the dot inside of the circle, inside of the spiral. So I'm really enthused, and maybe sometime we can talk about the divine masculine, because we need that to bring the earth to balance. So what is, you know, there's also a dark side of the feminine, which is truly dreadful. And we're seeing the dark aspects of both of those polarities in our world. And the key here is just bring in the divinity, and it itself will balance the masculine and feminine within us. Sometimes we try to make that a personality issue or to do that from our minds, when just by connecting to our soul energy, to our higher teachers and so on, that is just a natural thing that happens. And it comes through our awareness and self-observation. We have to watch ourselves as to where we're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we've been so conditioned for so long to sometimes be rather militant. You know, militant feminism was definitely a way to pave the way for this change and transition, because it took force to knock down force or to open the way for greater things to happen. But, you know, the feminine energy is gentle, nurturing, giving life, cooperative. But the masculine energy is the one that asserts the dynamic of change and of leadership and of, you know, expansion and expansion of consciousness. One is receiving, and the other one, of course, is a giving energy. So we need all of that in order to have change, and we all have that within us. And so, anyway.
Well, very well said, Anastasia. So we do have some callers that are ready with some questions or comments, and we are going to go first to Richard. Let me get your mic open first. Okay, Richard, you're on the air.
Hello, everybody. Hi, Ariel. Nice to talk to you again.
Oh, this is the Richard I know. Okay, I'm
yes,
like,
it is.
I
yes.
recognize
I'm,
your voice.
I'm the Richard
okay.
from the Sacred France trip.
Yes. And happy birthday almost.
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I like the others on the trip, got a chance to meet Jana at the last evening there and picked up a copy of her book. Started reading it, haven't gotten all the way through it because I actually interrupted myself to start going through Henry Lincoln's book. And it's a book called The Holy Place. It was actually recommended to me by Toby, who was the Grand Master of the Knights Templar that we met at Renault Chateau.
Mm-hmm.
And very fascinating read about the geometry, which is part of the research that I've been doing. And so I wanted to mention and comment that part of the lines that he has intersecting in the sacred geometry of the area that we were in, there's an intersection at a confluence of two streams, and each stream, one is named for the masculine and the other stream is named for the feminine. And I just thought it was how appropriate in this area that they have what I would call a geometric marker point at that exact intersection.
Wow. Yeah, and the whole concept of water and flowing and, you know, two parts flowing together and coming together, that's very, very good discovery.
Yeah, yeah, you know,
yeah.
And I would just encourage anybody who is at all interested, the book is a fascinating read, and the place just to be there and see the things that are talked about is just incredible. So if anybody ever gets a chance to do that, it's really a must-do.
Well, I know we have a lot of interest around France right now, and having just been there with a group of people, and now a whole flood of people that are, I'm so drawn to France. I'm so drawn to France. I've always wanted to go there, and I think there's some kind of a gong or a homing signal or some kind of magnetic thing that's happening that is activating people with their either their records in France or their alignment with the truth that is hidden in plain sight there.
Yes, yes, I totally agree. Yeah, well, and I just wanted to point out that neat little find on the two streams, because I thought it was so appropriate.
Oh, did we see that, or did you see it on the map?
No,
we
didn't see it. I actually found it with what I read in the book. And it was just kind of like putting two and two together.
Because there was a couple of places, actually right behind where we were staying, where the river split, two rivers came together.
Yes,
to join.
Yes.
And I thought, well, that would be really strange. We were right on top of it and didn't realize that. But that happens,
yeah.
I guess, in more than one place there.
Yeah, yeah, and the confluence that I'm speaking of is very near Rennes-le-Château.
Wow.
Excuse me for just a second. Was there any reference to when those rivers were named?
That is
Do
a very
know?
Good question. I don't know.
It seems so mystical and interesting to know when that.
Yeah.
Kind of like a, like you said, it's a clue.
Yes. Well, you know, it's fascinating to bring that up because Henry Lincoln, when he referred to a lot of places as being named during the time that the Celtics were there, when it was a lot of the names actually were Celtic influenced and just translated into more French and sometimes even Roman names afterwards.
Wow,
that would be a good study.
Would
yeah.
be a great study.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's juicy.
Great.
And it right. I mean, water is the perfect symbol for that.
Yes, yes.
Thanks for
really
sharing
is.
That with us.
Yeah.
Well, you're welcome. And enjoy the show. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Richard, and have a very happy solar return.
I will, and I'm all set for it.
Oh, good, good. Okay, sweetie. So good to
all
talk
right.
to you again. Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
It's so amazing. When I got back from France, I got an email about a Magdalene meetup group that was in Sedona. And so I went to it, and it's not just out of my pure just like, heart longing to be back around that energy again, and it was just an amazing group to go to. There's an email that comes along with that of all the people that are in the group and the different things that are happening, and there are just so many people that are going on these Magdalene tours now over to France. There were 5 groups left just in the last couple of weeks since we've been back. It is, and there's this talk going around that people are just being turned on. It's like this beacon that is calling people from just all walks of life, and it's just southern France and the Magdalene. It has just been amazing to sit back and witness.
Yeah, like I was saying much earlier about the patterns that I'm seeing, and I'm sure Lavendar is too, in charts, the people that are being, instinctually led or activated into this, the whole Mary Magdalene, South of France, the Divine Feminine. It's just, it's coming on really strong, and I'm really glad to see it, really glad to see it, because the balance of masculine and feminine is really what will provide the foundation for the 1,000 years of peace that has been prophesied. So if we have any other callers with questions, just press 1 on your keypad. And until then, we do have our dear sister, wonderful resident health expert, Ms. Belva, and we're going to just talk to you for just a moment here while we're getting other callers organized here. So, hello, Belva.
Hi, Ariel. It's Belva. I'm so glad. What a wonderful show. It's one of the best ones you ever had.
Oh, we love to hear that.
Receiving a book on Rene de la Chateau about 8 years ago, and a lady that I had met at Global Sciences was trying to buy that chateau. And I didn't get involved in it. I wish I had, and whether she did or not, I never did know. But it was very interesting, all of this, because I was so excited about it at that time, and I had just moved, and I didn't really know very much about it, and now I'm learning about it, and it's been about 8 years, so it's just fantastic.
Yeah, well, you know, it's everything starts, on a very microcosm kind of level, and then it branches out and branches out and branches out. So what you were witnessing was maybe part of a beginning spark, and now it's just really taken off like wildfire. People are being activated and wakened up, and I know that I see the markings in the charts all the time.
Amazing. It's just amazing, and I'm so glad at this particular time. People are afraid. People are worried about what's happening. They see all kinds of negative things happening. And I think it's an awakening time. I don't think of it as a negative. I think people are learning to awaken and realize many of the truths, including your show. You're waking people up that never dreamed the things that they are going to experience and have since the show's been on the air. I think it's fantastic, and I'm really, really excited about everything. And hopefully the next tour you take over there, maybe I'll be able to go.
Oh, well, that would be great. That would be great. And just so glad that you called in. It's always wonderful to have you on the show. And as I said earlier, Belva is our resident health expert, and she helps people with the physical body as well as the spiritual unseen parts, because it all works together. So, Belva, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you for speaking with me. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Okay, sweetie. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
Okay, well, we do have a lot of people on the switchboard, but apparently no one has any questions or comments. So I'm going to give you the last call for questions or comments. And okay, yep, that did it. Okay, we have a couple more people coming on as soon as they get out of the room with Sahar, then we'll bring them on the air. So next week, Lavendar, correct me if I'm wrong, but Meg Benedicte is going to be with us next week.
That's right.
Well, we are really excited about that. If you are not familiar with Meg Benedicte's work, it's just phenomenal. Just phenomenal. I can't say enough good things about her. And she's just so on it, so right on it. And she has her own radio show that's on Wednesday nights here on Blog Talk. But we loved having her as a guest on our show, and she will be here next week, Meg Benedicte. So, okay, we are going to pick up another caller right now. We're going to be talking to Chris. Hello, Chris. You're on the air.
Hi, Ariel. I'm calling from Wyoming, and I thought if nobody else wants to talk, I will.
Oh, great.
I just wanted to put in a plug for Jean's White Lie book. I bought a copy in France, brought it home, and couldn't put it down. And it's quite exciting. So, and as I heard people talk about the balance of feminine and masculine, you know, that's going on in that book, as well as the dark side of the feminine and masculine. So it was it's a book you can read on a lot of different levels, I think. So it's kind of an action adventure. Have you read it?
I have not yet. I have been kind of covered
up. I know you're busy.
Since we came back, but I will get caught up and be able to do things like read books. But yeah, that, you know, and that's really a good point that you brought out, because the divine feminine, the divine masculine, as everything, there's a light and a dark, or as Lavendar says, there's either up or down. But I think it's really important to understand what the I don't like to use the word dark, but it really is the right word, sides of everything, so that you can recognize it. If it's like, is this up spiral or down spiral? And
right,
if you can answer that question about anything, then you know whether you want to be connected to it or not. And certainly we all want to be connected to only the up spiral things,
right,
which are in growth and development, and the down spiral is not. It's just it's you know, degenerating. So that's a good point, Chris.
Yes, yes. And of course, in the book, the good guys win. So the up spiral, yay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's about fearlessness and being in the moment, and the time travel aspect is, you know, I wish that was true, let me tell you. It was really fun to read, as well as informative on other levels. So I just thought I'd, you know, give a thumbs up rating
great
on the book. Yeah.
That's great, great. And it's really good to talk to you. I haven't talked to you since France, and we just, I know we really hit it off, and it's good to hear you again.
Yeah, it's good to hear you guys too. And when the Soul Family calls in, it's just like my heart just goes pitter patter.
Uh-huh.
So it just was. It's still with me. So cheers, and I'll keep listening.
Okay, sweetie. Thanks
Thank
for calling
you.
In. Okay.
Bye.
Bye bye. Okay. So one more last call for comments or questions. And I'll give you just just hit that one on your keypad if you have a question, and if you don't, we're going to wrap it up. As I said, next week, Meg Benedicte, you don't want to miss that show because she is just fabulous. And we will also be having our dear Anastasia and Sierra and Lavendar and myself next week, as well as Sahar and Rose. Thank you so much for your work. We hope that you'll all tune in again next week. And do pick up White Lie. You can find it at Amazon or at Jean Adu's website. I'm going to spell that for you. It's www.jeanne, and the last name is daout.com. Jean Adu. Okay. Everyone, thank you so much. Anastasia, Sierra, Lavendar.
It's been great.
We'll see you all next week right here on Starseed Radio Academy. Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.